Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A brand new week of broadcasting on the horn. It is the 10th day of March 2014. A little bit of a hint of spring going on outside. My goodness gracious, we expect it to get all the way up to 70 degrees Fahrenheit tomorrow. Shucks, that's nudism weather. We'll be back into naked radio before we know what hit us. It's about 2.5 minutes past the hour. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the daily assortment of news stories for your examination and delectation. That's where you will find, among other things, the entree to the chat room. It's free. It's easy. You're welcome to join in any time. The room is, folks are wandering in even now. Devin has joined in. Jan's there. Sparky's there. Tim's there. Waggy's there. I'm there. Why aren't you there? Come on in if you're listening live. I got to be honest, there's seldom anybody there when the program isn't live. But if you're listening live, come on into the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. You are certainly welcome to participate. You will also find our spiffy new media player at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And you'll find, of course, the PayPal button. The PayPal button is how we keep everything going here. And thanks going out for the help we received over the course of the weekend. Thanks going out to our buddy Lib. And thanks going out to Reinhard. And thanks going out to our buddy Dennis in Kentucky, with whom we will be mowing grass here before we even know what hit us. Thank you all very, very much. Because that's how we keep all of this going. Thank you so very much. Now, of course, on any given evening, we try to raise $150. We have an opportunity this evening to perhaps get a little bit ahead, well, not really ahead, just get some daggum bills paid. The wolf is at the door. The wolf lives at the door most of the time until we kick the pooch off the porch periodically. And there are bills waiting to be paid. There are always bills waiting to be paid, but we have a little chance to wind up a little bit to the good. I don't know if you were listening to the beginning of Dr. Bill's program, but he told a delightful little story. It turns out he wasn't live this past Wednesday, and all I got was a note, and I didn't want to share it because I didn't know what the content exactly meant. He said, "Bob, I can't do the show this afternoon. I'm in a tizzy," and so you just hope everything's okay. And it turned out it was a very, very good tizzy because Dr. Bill had bought a couple of scratch off tickets and hit a little hunk of money. You know, not PayPal or even Hot Lotto. No, nothing like that. But he announced at the beginning of his program that this evening he was going to kick $100 over toward the horn in celebration of his good fortune, and he thought it would be a good thing to use it as a challenge to say, you know, so that anybody else who wants to join in can help him to get us to the point where we not only make an evening's fundraising goal, but maybe get a couple of dollars ahead. So Dr. Bill has a challenge out there. I told him to hold off until after the program was over. So he's got $100 that he will use to match the first $100 that comes in. And if you want to use the PayPal button, that's fine. Or if you want to use the traditional mail service route method, that's equally workable. Just maybe shoot me a note so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne that he doesn't have to wear his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the mailbox. So we have that on the table. The what shall we call that? The Dr. Bill Lucky Day Monday, March 10th challenge. So that's what's going on there. This is, of course, like I said, Monday, and we know what Mondays are around here. And God knows I'm in total agreement with our buddy Marty, who asked the question early on today. Can we not, let me see if I can find the exact wording. I don't want to. Marty just asked earlier today about 2 o'clock my time. Can we just nominate the entire CPAC convention for Moran Monday? And I couldn't agree more. Lord God, I tell you what, you know what? I was just over to the CPAC, and you know what they got over there? The stupid. I mean, they's just swimming in it, Uncle Jed. Yeah. Lots of stupid. I mean, tons and tons and tons of stupid over the weekend. And I guess it was headlined, and I'm gonna do you a favor. And let's be honest, I'm doing myself a favor too. I am not going to run the audio of Godzilla from Wasilla, you know, Caribou Barbie, the half-baked Alaskan, Mussolini. I'm not going to run the audio of her rewriting Green Eggs and Ham. She has already been grandmothered out of Moran Monday contention anyway. She owns it. She owns Moran Monday. Every Monday when Godzilla from Wasilla gets up and takes the first breath that she takes on any given day, she owns Moran Monday. This is every Moran Monday is kind of a runner-up Moran Monday, as compared to anything that Mussolini might have previously done. But in this case, she was sickening. And I don't run this audio simply because, we run some pretty annoying audio sometimes around here, but this is the apex. I mean, this is the, what's that huge mountain on Mars that's bigger than any mountain on Earth? This is that of Moranness. So we're gonna take a powder on it, but suffice to say, she absolutely butchered Green Eggs and Ham. Ruined it. It's just disgusting. Marty noting, thank you, Bob, for not running audio of Palin reading her lines badly. Nicole Sandler made me suffer through it earlier. There ain't no reason to do it twice. I mean, there is a limit to all we got in common is our misery, and the least we can do is share it. It was awful. You know, Green Eggs and Ham is a children's tale of tolerance and curiosity. And that vicious, spiteful, ignorant, hateful, misanthrope. Really? Is that a pageant title? Can I be misanthrope? Made a complete mess of it and turned it into some sort of right-wing screed about not drilling for enough oil or something. So I suppose at this point we can say that I have somehow... dishonorable mention? And by the way, I am still deeply affected by the passing of Bart Kopp, and I commend to you all a passage or a sort of valedictory that was penned by Tom Baggioni and published over at rawstory.com. You can find it simply by scrolling through the day's stories at headonradionetwork.com. Part and parcel of what we're doing, you know, by posting these stories and stuff is to you know, give you a reason to come to the Horn website. Don't worry. We're not selling anything on the Horn website. We don't sell anything. We don't charge a fee for anything. That's kind of what makes this special, we think. But it's certainly beneficial. The more people, you know, the more people who use the Horn website, the more reason there is for the Horn website to get better. By the way, thanks very much going out early on to Sal. Sal just chipped in to help with Dr. Bill's Lucky Monday Challenge, and we are only needing another 9 folks at $10 a piece to meet Dr. Bill's challenge, and thank you very, very much. I want to take a moment before we jump into the Morans, and I have a Moran that you might find a bit surprising, a bit shocking for this program. And we'll get to that in a moment. But I want, last night was the premiere, and not having cable around here, I didn't see it. But last night was the premiere of the new version of Cosmos with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And it's my understanding that that first episode also featured a lovely reminiscence of the importance of Carl Sagan and the original work he did in Cosmos. I mean, I remember, it's probably an unfair comparison, but I was, although not very particularly good at science, I've always loved it. And so I had a very good friend in high school, and I helped him with things like English, and he helped me with things like numbers. And I remember when the original Cosmos was on, the phone would ring as soon as the episode was over, and my buddy would be on the other line going, "Did you see that?" And I was like, "Did you see that? Yeah." It was pretty exciting. So in advance of the airing of this first episode, Neil deGrasse Tyson made an appearance over on CNN. And I just kind of want to offer this up as a sort of anti-Moran. An antidote to the Moranity. Because this is good. Neil deGrasse Tyson on CNN in advance of the airing of episode 1 of his version of Cosmos. Let's see, when did this happen? CNN's reliable sources on Sunday, sure. That's the best content CNN's had on that program in a while. All right, here we go.
A divided country where almost anything is fair game for snipers on both sides. But science? Shouldn't science be immune from politics? After all, it's called scientific fact for...
Now, wait just a damn minute. I think we've got a Moran nominee all by himself. This is Brian Stelter, who is the senior media correspondent for CNN. You'll note that he declares that, just right out, both sides do it, which is, of course, that disgusting urge toward duality that the for-profit media so eagerly embraces. Snipers from both sides. Gee, Brian Stelter, thanks for dragging out the eliminationist rhetoric. Golly, how could we ever have gotten through brunch without it?
We all know we live in a politically divided country where almost anything is fair game for snipers on both sides. But science? shouldn't science be immune from politics? After all, it's called scientific fact for a reason. And yet there are millions of climate deniers, evolution deniers, vaccine deniers out there. Last year, in a speech on climate change, President Obama summed up the war on science this way.
I don't have much patience for anyone who denies that this challenge is real. We don't have time for a meeting of the Flat Earth Society.
Many Americans agree with him, but many other Americans see science as an attack on their values or on their religion or on what they believe to be true. Which brings me to my next guest. I am so excited he's here today. He may just be the man who can end the war on science. At least he's got a better chance than you or I have. He's Neil deGrasse Tyson, an astrophysicist and director of the Hayden Planetarium in New York. And tonight, Fox will be premiering his new series, Cosmos. Can you imagine a primetime network television show all about science? Pretty amazing. Neil, welcome to...
What's Edith? A network primetime television show all about science. Pretty amazing. Only in the United States. Or Dumbassistan. Pretty amazing.
Jesus.
Skip a bit, brother.
The program.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk all about Cosmos in a moment, but I first want to ask you, do you think there is a war on science the way I'm describing? And if so, how do you think we can broker a peace?
Our civilization is built on the innovations of scientists and technologists and engineers who have shaped everything that we so take for granted today. So some of the science deniers or science haters, these are people who are telling that to you while they're on their mobile phone. Okay? They're saying, I don't like science. Science is bad. Oh, yeah, GPS just told us to go left. Yeah, okay. So it's time for people to sort of sit back and reassess what role science has actually played in our lives. And note and learn how to embrace that going forward, because without it, we will just regress back into the cave.
Cosmos seems like an example of using television, using the media for good when it comes to science. I talked recently on this program about climate change and how there aren't two equal sides when it comes to climate change. And yet sometimes the television and the media pretends it is that way. What responsibility do you think members of the media have to portray science correctly?
Yeah, I think the media has to sort of come out of this ethos that I think was in principle a good one, but it doesn't really apply in science. The ethos was whatever story you give, you have to give the opposing view, and then you could be viewed as balanced. In the clip that you showed of the president, you don't talk about the spherical Earth with NASA in it and then say, oh, now let's give equal time to the flat earthers. Plus, science is not there for you to cherry pick. I said this once, and it's gotten a lot of internet play. I said the good thing about science is that it's true whether or not you believe in it. All right, I guess you can decide whether or not believe in it, but that doesn't change the reality of an emergent scientific truth.
Give me an example of how you on the show try to show the truth of science.
Well, so no, I mean everything is the latest scientific understandings of everything. So that's a given. That's just a given. The real messages of the show is, now that you see what the science is, how does it matter? How and why does it matter to you? In what context? So the science is contextualized, if you will. So, for example, one of the most stunning visuals is the cosmic calendar, where we take the 13.8 billion year history of the universe and lay it onto a football field sized year at a glance calendar. And the value of that is, we all know what a calendar is. We know how far into the year June is, or July. We have a sense of that. So if I say the Big Bang was January 1st, and today is December 31st, when was our galaxy formed, the Milky Way? That was formed on March 15th.
Let's actually play a clip from the calendar, because I love the special effects you use. Let's take a look.
No, let's don't. Let's watch that again on the radio. No, let's don't. But really, a little golf clap to Neil deGrasse Tyson for simply saying that there is no flat earth position in response to the idea that the world is round or roundish. Uh, Marty with a by the way. Considering the reaction from the cons about a black Annie and a black Johnny Storm, has anyone out there noticed any right-wing racist tweets about Neil deGrasse Tyson hosting the new Cosmos in the place of the late Carl Sagan? Or did they do the whole, this is that evil science, so we won't watch? I don't know. I'm sure if you wanted to go wandering around the sewers of the right-wing corner of the Internet, you could find some, you know, maybe at one of those neo-Nazi sites, you could find it, sure, but why bother? thank you, Dr. John. Dr. John noting, yes, you nailed it. The fact that a primetime show about science is pretty amazing totally explains why so many Americans deny evolution, deny climate change, and so on. But even more, it explains why the media insists on validating morality. And also from the Department of Way Too Easy, this from Dr. John. I do not like Palin on a boat. I do not like her in a moat. I do not like her faux hot glam. I do not like her Sam I Am. Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Jim noting via email, Cosmos Revisited, having watched Carl Sagan in the 13-part series beginning 13 September 80 through 21 December 80, I watched the entire series this weekend. I'll never forget the impact of the same. Sagan died in 1996, but his work lives on. So glad the program in the new form is back. Hear, hear, I agree. And, you know, the death of Carl Sagan, sometimes things fall into positions in our lives that make them unforgettable. And I just happen to know exactly where I was when I found out that Carl Sagan had died. I was sitting in the rather impersonal and big brick waiting area of the University of Alabama Birmingham Medical Center, reading the Birmingham News. And there was a piece in there about the passing of Carl Sagan. And it meant something because it was pretty obvious at that time that that my mother was going to pass away. Carl Sagan was, I think, 62 when he passed away. My mother was 72 when she passed. And a little bit later, we would go up and see her for 15 minutes or so, my father and I, as she laid there in intensive care with the medical marvels of science providing a tube down her throat to compel her to breathe, and they would compel her to breathe for another 6 months, or almost 6 months. So that's how I remember when Carl Sagan passed away. So just a little acknowledgement as the evening begins of the, you know, the work that's out there trying to make science real and accessible and maybe even inspiring. You know, Carl Sagan certainly inspired me. There are some things inspiration cannot do. Inspiration cannot make you, for instance, good at higher level math. But it can make you, it can inspire you to want to know what science is finding out. Expect a right-wing hissy just any day now over information coming out of a place called Dartmoor in the UK, where it looks like, quite possibly, we may be running the effective dates of the Bronze Age backwards a little ways. Which, of course, is going to present a problem, because if it gets run backwards much further, we're going to be past that creation date that Ken Ham and the weirdos who think that Adam and Eve rode a Tyrannosaurus Rex to a comfortable picnic spot where Adam and Eve knew, where Adam knew Eve and Eve knew Adam, and well, then they, right, and Cain and Abel and who the hell did they marry? It all transpired. Just, you know, sort of be on the lookout, as it were. So, yeah, that. And then, of course, like I said, morons everywhere. We will travel to Idaho Stan for our first nominee this evening. Our first nominee this Moran Monday is, and I have no idea how to pronounce this, is it Kootenai, 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 Jonesville, Kootenai, any help from Idaho residents is more than welcome. County Sheriff Ben Wolfinger. Sheriff Wolfinger is all upset-like because he's a Christian and he's deeply offended by the Boy Scouts. Yeah. Why is he offended by the Boy Scouts? Because the Boy Scouts of America ended its ban on gay scouts, and he don't want none of them in his scout troop that he sponsors. See, Idaho has a crimes against nature statute, which arguably should have been wiped out a long time ago by the Supreme Court in its previous decisions, but Sheriff Ben Wolfinger is still clinging to it. He said having a gay scout violates Idaho's crimes against nature statute because it prohibits sodomy. Yeah, sodomy. And he also said that his Christian faith and reliance on biblical teachings led him to his decision. And that got me thinking about some biblical teachings. I thought we'd wander over to Genesis because they love them biblical teachings from Genesis so very much. Let's go to Genesis chapter 19 since he referred to sodomy. Genesis chapter 19, verse 30. This is after the all-knowing, all-loving God of the universe has smote the living hell out of Sodom and Gomorrah and reduced them to a heap of burning rubble as if he, God himself, or Osama bin Laden, or some sort of terrorist flying an airplane into a building. The sun was risen, this is verse 23, the sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven, you know, because he loved them so much. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. Then, of course, Lot's wife looks back and gets turned into a pillar of salt because God loves her too. And that would have consequences, because down in verse 30, we find out that old Lot, having had his wife turned into a pillar of salt, was all alone, except for his two daughters. Verse 30, and Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him. Mama, it would have been helpful for Mama to be around here. Of course, you got to wonder what kind of family values they had when you see what transpires. And Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. This is not going to end well. And the firstborn said unto the younger, and the first one said to the second one there, I hope you're having fun, band on the run, band on the run, band on the run. And the county judge who held a grudge, never mind. And the firstborn said unto the younger, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come in unto us. And they let children read this. After the manner of all the earth, come, let us make our father drink wine. Drink it, old man! And we will lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. You're my daddy, you're my daddy, you're my daddy. And they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he perceived not when she lay down nor when she arose. That must have been some fine, fine, fine Thunderbird, because he was passed right out. And it came to pass on the morrow, it was always coming to pass back then, that the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay yesternight. You know what? We've lost some great words over the years. That's one of them. Yesternight. Can we get that back into the coin of the realm, linguistically speaking? Because it's just handy. For instance, we could say, on yesternight's program. Isn't that great? Don't you love that? And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, you'll notice these women don't even get names. They're just wombs with legs and apparently dirty minds. And it came to pass on the morrow that the firstborn said unto the younger, behold, I lay yesternight with my father. Let us make him drink wine this night also, and go thou in and lie with him, that we may preserve seed of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also. Drink it again, old man! And the younger arose and lay with him, and he perceived not when she lay down nor when she arose. Now, either Lot was a lightweight, or I don't know. What's the biblical version of chloral hydrate? Maybe the Mickey Finn ought to be called the Lot Finn. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. And that's verse 36. We've been six verses here. Six verses, two nights. They both get pregnant. So you got to figure, they're figuring that out about 4, 5, 6 weeks later. And that just gets glossed over for the two daughters of Lot who don't have any names because, well, why would you care? Maybe we can call them Palin and Bachman. Let's see what that does to the text. And Palin said unto Bachman, our father is old, and there is not a man in the earth to come unto us after the manner of all the earth. Which I guess there's a... that's sort of an ancient hearkening of birds do it, bees do it, even na-da-na-da with it, na, whatever. Thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father, and then 9 months. 9 months in which Lot, who we are not told, but I don't know, did they just keep him liquored up so that he wouldn't notice their little baby bumps? Who knows? Maybe they told him angels did it. That seems to work among those preliterate barbarians. Yeah, Dad, I'm all pregnant. Angels did it. Oh well, praise be to God. Hey, Sarah. Yeah, Michelle. I told him the angels did it. And Palin bare a son, and called his name Moab, the same is the father of the Moabites unto this day. And Bachman, she also bare a son and called his name Ben-Ami. Isn't that a scouring powder? Oh, well. The same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day, which was back then, not right now, because I think the Moabites and the Ammonites both got slaughtered down to the last human being back when, never mind. Oh, Jesus. So there's your family values that inspired the sheriff of Hootenanny County, Idaho, to end his relationship with the Boy Scouts of America. Inspiring, isn't it? Just remember, anytime you hear some fundy say family values, just refer them to Genesis 19, verse 30. Please make a note of it. I was thinking about the same thing. When Lot's daughters were getting him all liquored up, I won't speak for all the guys out there, but booze has a non-salutary effect on sexual performance. And the same thing occurred to Dr. John. He said, something doesn't ring true about this story. Recall your Shakespeare from Macbeth, Act 2, Scene 3, the porter to Macduff. Drink provokes the desire, but it takes away the performance. Makes you wonder what else went on in Lot's tent, doesn't it? There's more of that stuff in that allegedly holy book. Kate with a note, thank you. Kootenai. First Nations in origin. I had a feeling. I just didn't know what to do with the N-A-I, because that looks kind of Greek. And that would be Ai, but Kootenai. And Kate says, thanks for not playing the Calliope intro. You're more than welcome, Kate. Luda pointing out that the Kootenai are a tribe of the Salish-speaking people in Montana, also known as the Flathead. Okay, I remember reference to them in my Lewis and Clark. Yeah. No, yeah, I don't care, Tim. You can dare me from now until the end of the program. I will not do my Godzilla from Wasilla voice. No, absolutely not. Yeah, just can't make me. So, you know, there's a Moran nominee for you. The sheriff of Kootenai County, Idaho. Now the one that I said you might find a little bit surprising. This past weekend was not just CPAC. This past week saw the 33rd annual Sarah Week Conference, C-E-R-A Week, W-E-E-K, Conference, Sarah Week. Participants included BR Petrobras, Siemens, Chevron, on and on. And what it boils down to, Sarah Week describes itself as being, and this is a quote, the energy industry's preeminent gathering of industry leaders and government officials offering new ideas, insight, and discussions on major strategic issues facing the global energy industry. My, oh my, doesn't that sound like a rollicking good time? Hey, whose water can we poison next? So they admit it. They get a bunch of hydrocarbon goons together, and they hobnob and what have you with a bunch of government people so that the energy people can have greater influence over the government people who are actually supposed to be working not for the hydrocarbon people, but for we, the people. Oops. Tickets to CERAWeek, there's a reason I wasn't there and you weren't there. Tickets to CERAWeek run somewhere around as much as $7,500 a pop. Well, one of the speakers to the plenary sessions was Administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Gina McCarthy. And of course, when you've risen that high in the government atmosphere, I mean, she's a bright, talented individual. And she knows how to give a speech, and she knows how to warm the crowd up to her. And the best way to warm the crowd up to you, especially when they may not be so crazy about you in the first place, is to tell them a funny that'll make them feel good about themselves and understand that you really share their values. This is Gina McCarthy, who is administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency and has an affirmative duty to protect the environment. There is nothing in the charter of the Environmental Protection Agency saying that it is her job to protect the hydrocarbon industry. Mm-mm. No, I don't have the audio. But you can imagine it. It's a ballroom somewhere. They're all pretty much the same. Kind of like that ballroom at the Gaylord National Harbor or whatever, where they had CPAC that had 1,000 empty seats at the minority outreach panel. And so, yeah. Good afternoon. I'm Gina McCarthy. I'm the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. Hold your applause. See, that's a laugh line because the hydrocarbon industry despises the Environmental Protection Agency because it kills jobs with its job-killing regulations, right? And I just wanted to let all of you know that I'm happy to be here today. I really enjoy being with all of you folks from the energy industry. I really enjoy hanging out with you guys more than I do with those environmentalists because, well, energy executives, and here's the quote, here's the Moran Monday nomination. Speaking of hydrocarbon industry insiders and lobbyists and hacks and flacks, she said, quote, comparing them to environmentalists, remember. Are you an environmentalist? I'm not. I'm a human rights advocate. Because environmentalist is a name that people like the people who go to CERAWeek gave to people who don't want to have their communities poisoned. Oh, they're environmentalists. They care more about birds, bugs, beetles, and butterflies than they do jobs. Jobs. You know, I really enjoy being with you energy executives more than I do with the environmentalists because energy people, well, quote, damn it, quote, as in she really said this, no funny voices, no monkeying around, quote, they dress better, less flip-flops.
Well, damn, Gina, why don't you just call them dirty fucking hippies and get it over with? They dress better. Less flip-flops. Right, because, see, if you show up with some nice, shiny Brooks Brothers cap-toe Oxfords with a good leather sole and a nice rubber heel, by God, that denotes somebody who is well-heeled, ha-ha, enough to be taken seriously. Not some DFH in flip-flops. Really? How? And I found this over at dsmogblog.com, one of my favorite sites. How is a member, I mean, even misguided people who still call themselves environmentalists, how are we supposed to feel about the Environmental Protection Agency after a statement like that? Now, I'm sure, and I'm not trying to set up a straw man here, I am sure that the response is, well, it was just a joke. Isn't that a little bit like Mel Gibson hollering, well, I was drunk when I was hollering about the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. Don't we often tuck away some of our great truths inside humor? Just as surfeit of booze will not make you say things you wouldn't have said in the first place, but rather will make you be a little bit more truthful than you otherwise would have been because the inhibitions are down. That was what occurred to me. And, of course, there was a rousing chorus of hydrocarbon industry laughter. Because that's always funny. Laughing about those tree huggers, those DFHs who wear flip-flops and, you know, care about the planet when there's profit to be made. Hippies. I mean, I guess they're just gonna run the globe on love and freeze to death in the dark. Oh, she was there for a purpose, and it was to try to provide more than a little bit of. Shoulder-rubbing camaraderie to the people who are responsible for poisoning probably more human beings than any other industry on the planet. This all took place, by the way, in Houston, which is damn near a Superfund toxic waste dump in the first place. She went on to tell them after the laughter had subsided about the DFHs and the tree huggers and the environmentalists and the people with the beards and the long hair and the flip flops. She said, let me be clear about one thing. Conventional fuels like coal and natural gas are going to play a critical role in a diverse energy mix for years to come. We believe there are technologies that if we continue to invest, will allow fossil fuels to be part of the mix as we look at the transition to a clean energy mix. Well, those fossil fuels got higher billing than clean energy. Nick Akins is the CEO of American Electric Power, which owns Appalachian Power, which wants a $68 million rate increase from me and a whole bunch of other people here in West Virginia. He said at a press conference this past Thursday that the EPA has been, quote, saying the right things.
I'm encouraged by the comments by the EPA, but at the same time, the proof is when the rule comes out. In order not to impact the economy and the reliability of the grid, we need to ensure this is done in a rational way. Oh, that's a knee slapper. That's a Moran Monday knee slapper, the reliability of the grid. Yeah, that grid whose wires are strung on toothpicks all over Appalachistan that blow down when an 80 mile an hour straight line wind comes through and knocks power out for 2 weeks in a whack. When meanwhile over in say Germany, they experience annual power outages on average that last minutes, not weeks. Oh, it's so much more fun talking to you, well-groomed hydrocarbon people, than it is talking to those environmentalists. Less flip-flops. Because I don't think that flip-flop in that sense means that environmentalists are constantly changing their position. You know, what they accused John Kerry of doing in the 2004 presidential election. No, this is actually referring to the fact that some people in the environmental community wear sandals. And apparently, your life is not worth protecting if you wear sandals. Now, call me crazy, but that seems a little bit arbitrary and capricious. And then Ernest Moniz got to speak. And he had... He had some advice this past Wednesday. For the oil industry. James Osborne at Dallas News Business wrote both of these stories. Ernest Moniz said, the industry could do a lot better job talking about the drivers for and what the implications would be for a country that still imports 5 million barrels of oil a day. He was, in essence, saying that he's the energy secretary, that the oil industry hadn't made a good enough case on why the federal government should allow the export of domestic oil. See, that is why, all this stuff kind of ties together. That is why the Canadian tar sands oil that they want to bring through that giant tube of toxins, otherwise known as the Keystone XL pipeline, all the way down to the refineries in Houston, that's why it gets on a boat and goes to China. Domestic oil, James Osborne writes, domestic oil producers have been lobbying that the trade ban puts them at a competitive disadvantage to companies drilling abroad who can sell their oil at the higher-priced European benchmark. Well, at least Dr. Moniz didn't have anything to say about the DFHs and their flip-flops. There was a little bit of truth-telling from the industry itself, however. Chevron CEO John Watson this past Tuesday said U.S. energy policy is increasing income inequality.
The relatively wealthy can afford to pay for energy. Many of the energy policies we have in place promote income inequality.
There's probably no small amount of truth-telling in that. What happens, to the income inequality of someone who can no longer drink the water out of their well because their water got fracked up and poisoned? Well, they have to buy water after that,
and that promotes income inequality. Ernest Moniz also wants the fracking industry to get with it, saying that they need to get out in front of the problems and do more to address concerns over the environmental impacts of unconventional exploration and production. Moniz said, "It's evident that environmental issues related to unconventional production have in fact slowed development of resources in certain parts of the U.S., but not others." In other words, there are some places where people have managed to slow down fracking. He's probably talking about New York State. While other places are free to be routinely poisoned, like, say, West Virginia or Pennsylvania, or now, thanks to the help of the Sierra Club, Illinois. Jesus. They dress better. Plus flip-flops. Oh, my, oh, my. She is a funny one. And then coming from far-flung Afghanistan, oh, dear God, I saw this story and I felt like crying. It comes via Agence France-Presse. It is from today. You'll find the story reposted over at headonradionetwork.com. Just going to read a little bit of it. Afghanistan promised Monday, promised, interesting word, to work with foreign investors, promise, foreign investors, oh dear, to ramp up mining, as the United States provided high-tech maps to help the war-torn nation exploit its natural wealth. Now, I don't want anybody to think that I'm some sort of a prophet with a tattered purple robe and moon and stars appliques on the sleeves and a busted magic eight ball from 30 years ago whose screen constantly reads, "Answer hazy, ask again later," but I think I've been mentioning this for the past few weeks because it's kind of been on my mind. Afghanistan promised Monday to work with foreign investors to ramp up mining, as the United States provided high-tech maps to help the war-torn nation exploit its natural wealth. Exploit. That's probably true, but when you de-Orwellize that language, what exploit its natural wealth means, the greatest natural wealth of any polity, any nation, any civic body, any political subdivision, the greatest natural wealth that that body will have will be, by definition, its people. And Lord God, if they're going to start mining in Afghanistan, yes, indeedy, the people will be exploited with a rough and rude vengeance. With U.S.-led combat forces due to leave later this year, Afghanistan's Minister for Mines and Petroleum voiced confidence that his government would ensure security and approve legislation to bring clarity to investors. There's some more of that clarity we're lacking. What the hell does that mean, clarity to investors? That means that the Afghan government is promising to let the global capitalists come in and do whatever they need to do to extract the wealth out of the ground of Afghanistan and devil take the hindmost as far as the people, the land, clean air, clean water be concerned. Clarity to investors means they're going to be able to get away with murder. And then this line, it comes from Mines and Petroleum Minister Mohammed Akbar Barakzai, who came to Washington, D.C. to say this. Sit down. I mean, for those of you who are longtime listeners to the program, sit down. Tennis ball. Duct tape. The only way we can have progress in our economy is through mines, minerals, and hydrocarbons. The way we think that can be done is that we do these deals transparently. This all took place at a shindig over to the Afghan embassy, where the U.S. Geological Survey... No, really, the U.S. Geological Survey ceremonially handed over data that provides the Kabul government with a high level of detail on mineral deposits and other features over 70% of the landmass of Afghanistan. The data comes, Agence France-Presse reports, the data comes from hyperspectral imaging, an advanced technique in which planes create maps by detecting visible and near-infrared light reflected from the Earth's surface. So all the time that we've been running aircraft back and forth across Afghanistan in this, the longest war in our history, we haven't just been bombing mud huts or using drones laden with hellfire missiles to ruin the occasional wedding party. No, we've been mapping the F out of Afghanistan trying to find the buried money. Yes. With the data, Afghanistan has become the only country in the world that is mostly mapped through hyperspectral imaging, said Suzette Kimball, acting director of the U.S. Geological Survey. And yes, this goes back to 2010. U.S. geologists estimated that Afghanistan was sitting on some $1 trillion in mineral deposits, including copper, iron, and lithium, a key material in batteries for electric cars. Afghan officials have put the estimate three times as high, raising hopes for a country rocked by war since the 1970s. Do you have a working picture of what this is going to look like? See, this touches me because I don't have to share a religion with someone. I don't have to share a language with someone. I don't have to share an ethnicity with someone to recognize that once again, this is a case of hillbillies being laid bare-ass naked backwards over an altar to have their hearts cut out of their bodies for the sake of some investors, who, of course, will never get anywhere near Afghanistan, but will clip coupons, watch the stock ticker, and say, oh, look, Amalgamated Afghan Lithium's up 2 points today. Well, Homer, we're $15 million richer today. Good for us. The water will run poison. The blasting, well, frankly, There will be more explosions in Afghanistan if they start doing this than there have been during this, the longest war in America's history. Remember, here in Appalachia, mountaintop removal, 5.5 million pounds a day of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives that cloud the air, fall into the streams, get breathed into children's lungs, I could weep. The only way we can have progress in our economy is through mines, minerals, and hydrocarbons. That's that toxic Tina at work. The long, dead hand of Margaret Thatcher reaching out of the grave and across the globe to explain to Muhammad Akbar Barakzai, Tina, there is no alternative. Great God Almighty. Lithium. Lithium. As mentioned previously, it was back at Power Shift in 2009 when Van Jones said, if we do not change our attitude toward other countries, the next war will be fought for the lithium to run our battery-powered clean energy tanks. Turns out we didn't even have to wait for the next war. It was the war that was being waged and was some 7 years old even as he spoke. Lord. Lord, Lord. Minister Barakzai also said that the impoverished nation took in $146 million in revenue each year from mining, but wanted to boost the figure to the billions by 2020. Billions and billions. And then there's reference to something I didn't even know existed. Joseph Catalino is head of the Pentagon's Task Force for Business and Stability Operations. The Pentagon's Task Force for Business and Stability Operations. And Joseph Catalino says he still sees strong interest from investors. Really? Investment advice from the Pentagon. No, here, don't you want to buy a $5,000 toilet seat? It stays down on the toilet even in zero gravity. It won't float up. Poor Afghanistan. So far from God. And not nearly far enough from the United States. Porfirio Diaz, you, sir, were a prophet. So therein lies the filibobster for this Moran Monday. The lines are open, you know, 304-658-3333 if you want to get in on the conversation, and I welcome you to do so. It's kind of strange to be doing the program with light still in the sky outside. The change over to daylight savings time brings us a little more daylight into the studio, so hopefully that means, and with hopefully warmer weather on the way, it means maybe the power bill will drop a little bit. One hopes. Lottie noting in the chat room, Bob, why not the Pentagon? Our tax dollars are paying for the NSA to do corporate espionage for our private corporations, too. Yeah, why not? Why not, indeed? A gentle reminder that we have on the table Dr. Bill's Lucky Monday Challenge. He's offered to match the first $100 in contributions that come in toward toward funding our this Monday's fundraising goal. And thanks going out to Sal, who is the only one to respond to that thus far. You know where the PayPal button is. You'll also find there at headonradionetwork.com the traditional mail address if you prefer to operate in that fashion. A note from Jack in Shreveport, Afghanistan. And the mapping was paid for by the U.S. citizens, successfully externalized by the corporations. Bingo! We have a winner. Randy reminding us, don't forget the possible underground pipeline that leads from Caspian oil deposits through Afghanistan. Oh, yes. That was what Hamid Karzai was originally supposed to be negotiating for UNICAL. A little bit of disagreement coming in from Marty. He says, the next war will be over fresh water. New Zealand is about to be declared a harbor for terrorists, and we'll have to invade them. I think the big villain will be Saruman in league with Sauron, with their evil orcs and trolls, probably a dragon or two. We'll have to invade the two islands to take their water. One or the other. So let's take a break. Line up your calls, 304-658-3333. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach the program. Look forward to the conversation, because this is, after all, conversation radio, listener-supported. This is The Horn.
When I pull out of Basel, they all wish me luck, just like they always did before. With a bulletproof screen on the hood of my truck and a Bradley on my back door, I wound her up and I shifted back, and I offered this prayer to my Lord. Said, God, get me back home to Houston alive, and I won't drive a truck anymore. This early in the morning, I'm rolling fast, I'm on 9,000 gallons of hot test gas. Sergeant on the radio hollering at me, said, look out of ahead, here come a RPG. If I ever get home to Houston alive, I won't drive a truck anymore. Well, I've driven big rigs for all of my life.
The incomparable Steve Earle, home to Houston. Hour number two begins. It's been begun. It's about 15 minutes past the hour, 15 minutes past 7 here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. During this, the live program, you're free to have it be whatever time you need it to be while you're listening to the podcast, if you're not listening live. Let us go straightway to the phones. By the way, happy birthday going out to Truth Seeker. I'm informed in the chat room that is, it is in fact Truth Seeker's birthday. Happy 40th, Truth Seeker. Happy 40th indeed. The phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How are you tonight?
Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Reflecting on a couple comments you made earlier. First, about Carl Sagan. I sent you that in the email. I enjoyed that. Now, that was a generation ago.
It was indeed a generation ago.
34 years ago. That program commenced on 25 September and ended on 21 December of 1980. And
that was my senior year of high school. That's why,
13-part series. It was really great to see it again this weekend. I watched the entire series, plus the lead-in to the new Cosmos, lack of a term, which is probably good, quite good. And you mentioned something about Idaho. There must be something in the water in Idaho, because back in 1955, there was a huge homosexual scandal out there. And a book was written about it called The Boys from Boise, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a controversy at its time. I mean, 15 people went to jail over it, and it was just a real scandal. But apparently, I guess Larry Craig must have drunk some of that water, too, when he was doing his wives thing.
There is an Idaho thing. Wasn't there a rather famous sort of indie kind of movie, My Own Private Idaho?
Well, I mean, I was wondering about that because that was done by Gus Van Sant, starring River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves. And I just wonder if that had anything to do with it because, it was a very good movie, really. It was very interesting. Of course, Gus Van Sant takes you to many places where you might not want to go. But, there was. My Own Private Idaho. And like I say, when you mention Idaho and something coming out of there about people and stuff like that, just remember that book that was published, and this happened in 1955, going back to then. So it must be something there causing problems. Who knows?
There's all kinds of stuff about Idaho, Jim. I mean, Randy Weaver, Ruby Ridge. It's been a haven. It was highly populated by Mormons.
That state has definitely produced a number of things that are, quite interesting to say the very least. And, But like I said, you can take a look up about The Boys from Boys, 1955. It was a whole big mess about that thing. It really was. I might want to take a look at it.
I believe.
So, anyway, as far as the rest of the world is concerned, Afghanistan, I'm sure that they're going after that tungsten and a lot of the stuff that's over there. I just wonder.
I mean, the burn and lithium.
Mm-hmm. Tongue, too. If I'm not mistaken. Anyway, there are a number of elements over there. Just by the mining things, but I just wonder some of the react to that and a safe mining operation might be. It's kind of a turbulent part.
Well, think about that for a minute. Is there any reason to think that the extraction industries will behave any differently in Afghanistan than they have in any other impoverished economy? It was 100 years ago in Appalachia to enforce the will of the mining companies. It happens to this day in extraction companies. It happens to this day in places like Colombia and Nigeria. You can bet there will be highly armed security at these operations. And they probably do a little bit double duty in occasional bit of death squad work. I mean, let's say some tribal chieftain decides that he doesn't like to see his clan's water running black or red or poisonous, or some reason wrong that this is Allah's creation and we're not supposed to add it up. He's talking to that. You think some black water type will and put one right by here in the Negrim and investors secure? Investor clarity.
Well, the thought had occurred to me. But I think that knowing those people over there, they can make things pretty rough on some people who are trying to exploit them. I'm just pointing into history and reflecting on the difficulties that have been had by countries who tried to invade and, you know, envelop that country. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you know, I think they can fight pretty well. They've had certainly a lot of experience with it, haven't they?
They have, but I don't know. They've fought nation states. I don't know if they've ever fought a corporate state. Because,
well,
remember, corporations have no ethics whatsoever.
Well, you're probably right.
I mean, if it takes dragging a few little Afghan infants out into the streets and bashing their heads against the walls, don't think for a minute that Chevron or BP or Shell or Peabody or whoever the hell's doing it will bat an eyelash about it.
Well, Charlie Wilson's gone, and I don't think there's going to be any moves in the stinger to fight these corporations and stuff like that. So who knows? Afghanistan has certainly had share problems and would be, but who knows? I guess maybe some of the corporate can because they'd be able to talk about. But you won't hear one tear about that, I guess.
Oh, no, we'll have the economic mirror of Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. And then they get all upset because Putin wants a Crimea. That's the damnest thing I've ever heard of. Got any reflections on those actions lately?
The right wing made a complete, how can they embarrass themselves anymore, Jim? But they, who was it that said his response to Putin would be to drill everywhere all the time? Was that Rand Paul?
I guess it was. I mean, he said so many things. I don't know. Is that what Paul? I'm sorry. Run that by me again.
His response to Putin would be to drill everywhere all the time.
Oh, that's what Paul said.
Yeah, he came away. They have a straw poll at CPAC every year.
Yeah, I saw the results of that. He won it.
Yeah, and he won it, and he was the only one openly campaigning for the presidency. And offered up, Charlie Pierce has the best analysis of his speech. Apparently Charlie was there. Not apparently, Charlie was there. They let him in and everything. And he has the best analysis of what Rand Paul had to say of anybody that I've read. You know, he talks about how things are, and then, according to Mr. Pierce, doesn't bother to say whether he would so act were he the guy in the Oval Office. Which, and this is my observation, is exactly the way that Ronald Reagan got into office, Jim. By talking about shining cities on the hill and, well, there you go again. And, you know, all of that insane, inane palaver.
Just plain bullshit, really.
Well, that's another word for it. And the next thing you know, you had low information voters, the so-called, what were they, the Reagan Democrats going, well, he wants to make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
And you get 8 years of, 8 years of misery, 8 years of excess, the beginning of the dismantling of the American body politic. You get death squads wandering through Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. You get, liberation theology priests being blown away. You get American-funded death squad members raping nuns in the street. I mean, it was a great day for America, Jim.
Yeah, I know. Honduras or something else. Oh, God. I've been down there. I was there for 3 months running a learning center for the Army. So, I mean, and that's about the time when a lot of that stuff was going on. Oh, boy, I don't even want to talk about that now. I don't know why I brought it up, but that's not a very pleasant part of my life. But I was just wondering what your comments were about the ongoing problems with, Ukraine and stuff like that.
Well, you know, I think we had a very, very good discussion on Friday on the Front Porch program with a lot of help from the Angry Indian. the stuff that's beginning to filter out of there is absolutely shocking. I mean, there is a serious fascist Nazi, if you will, presence. I watched a bit of BBC video over the weekend where they interviewed some of the Nazis. And they're even walking around with I forget what the name of the symbol is. It's of course not the swastika. These are yellow armbands with parallel lines with kind of a zigzag going through them.
The SS rune?
Yes, the SS rune. That is exactly what it is. Now, not the Schutzstaffel.
Well, that's what they use.
No, this isn't like the lightning bolt SS like at the end of the KISS logo. This is a different rune, but it is an SS rune that was used by a number of SS units, and they were marching around the streets of Kiev wearing it.
Well, I can certainly understand why the Russian Federation President, Mr. Putin, is not real happy with all that.
I can see where whether they be communist Russians or newly capitalist Russians, might feel just a little bit tetchy about a bunch of Nazis running around the Ukraine. Or a bunch of Nazis running around anywhere, for that matter.
Now, you know, I may draw a lot of criticism by saying this, and maybe it may seem quite atavistic, but I think the worst thing in the world that ever happened was the collapse of the Soviet Union. I really do. I mean,
I don't think that's going to draw a whole lot of pushback or naysaying,
because I mean, you had one central government controlling 15 semi-autonomous republics, but still the control came from a central area.
Yeah, and look, this all those right wingers out there like to say, well, Ronald Reagan killed the Soviet Union with his bare hands when he said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I favor a reunified Germany. The Germans obviously favored a reunified Germany.
Oh, I have no problem.
The Poles wanted to be Poles and not just a Soviet satellite state again. I understand all of that.
Well, I favor a reunified Russia. And the reason I do this is because ever since those little republics went awry, and ever since that whole system collapsed, there has been a destabilization of a country that occupied 15 time zones. And also, you've got problems with span of control of weapons, nukes, and things like that. At least back in the old days, the Soviet Strategic Rocket Forces controlled their nuclear weapons, and God only knows where they are now.
I think there's that, but what I was kind of getting at, Jim, is the fact that the fall of the Soviet Union, once again, it's the failure of American foreign policy to understand that things are more than simple dualities, that this is not a binary world. And I guess these idiot right-wingers thought that the fall of the Soviet Union would provide an opportunity for some sort of overarching global American hegemony.
I'm afraid that didn't quite work.
No.
It ain't gonna work. And as a matter of fact, we've got somebody who's going to tell us that it's not going to work, and
look, there's another example on a slightly smaller scale, but with considerably more sort of approachable, tangible results. Look at what happened in the fall and breakup of the former Yugoslavia. Now, it was only capable of being held together by the iron will of
Tito.
And
God, when you look at
but the minute that fell apart, well, you know, let's everybody kill everybody else.
God, I can remember when Sarajevo was the host for the Winter Olympics. Now look at Sarajevo now. Hell, the Olympic stadium is now a cemetery, and you know, stuff like that. I mean, there were a lot of bad things going on in the former Soviet Republic.
Yeah, and I don't think you're blinking at that or giving it a pass, Jim. But realities are realities.
Well, that's my point exactly. I mean, you know, I would prefer to deal with one that I can deal with and know what the hell I'm dealing with than you don't know who the hell you're dealing with when you're dealing with 15 and who they're going to go over to or sell suitcase nuclear weapons and stuff like that, and also bacteriological agents and things of that nature.
Oh, by the way, Tim from L.A. just looked up the rune. You may be familiar with it once I have the name for it here. It's the Wolfsangel 2nd SS Panzer Division symbol. Wolfsangel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It kind of looks like a backwards N. Well, what it looks like is a European Z, you know, with the stroke through the middle.
Right.
Turned on its side.
Yeah, I've seen that before. That's just what it was, yeah.
And it's just Nazi, 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 Nazi. And you got a bunch of people running around in Kiev wearing them and shooting at people.
Yeah, and you've got a...
And in fact, that is the symbol that's worn by the guy who led the brigade, or group, or whatever you want to call them, who came from the IDF.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a... it just stuns me. You've got a Jewish member, a Jewish veteran of the IDF, running around wearing Nazi insignia in an internal conflict among Ukrainian people.
And considering what happened to the Jews in that particular part of the world when the Nazis invaded it. It beats the hell out of me, Bob. Sure as hell does. But this thing is not over yet, and it's not going to be over anytime soon. I mean, the Russians are definitely, you know, it's their territory, it's their area of the world, it's their sphere of influence, and I'm going to support allowing them to have that.
Well, look, the American That's people, a majority of the American people think that Barack Obama is doing the right thing foreign policy-wise in his response over there. And so far, that response over there has not involved rolling tanks into Ukraine. And I am all for not rolling tanks into the Ukraine. I don't want to send them guns. I don't want to send them any kind of arms. Of course, the other side of that is
not rolling tanks. You mean our tanks or their tanks?
Yeah, our tanks.
Right.
But you know, there's money that's being proffered in the billions of dollars.
Oh yeah.
And once again, you know, everything old is new again, Jim. We've got ourselves a nasty little proxy fight going on.
Well, now the Russians are establishing, according to what I see on the news, they're setting up border posts and stuff like that. And the reason I guess I'm asking this, I can't understand why they even gave the Crimea to the Ukraine anyway, when they established the Commonwealth of Independent States in 1991. Why did they do that? Would they not realize that the Russian Republic would not want that back? Like I said before, it's like a land aircraft carrier in their sea.
It's a little Crimean Sudetenland.
Well, it is a strategic importance, military importance, to the Russian Republic.
Yeah, arguably far more so than the Sudetenland.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I say, it is a huge land aircraft carrier that controls the entire Black Sea. And, of course, you know, ever since Peter the Great, and even before then, that's their warm water port. And that's something that's very important. And I just can't understand why the Crimea was given to the Ukraine in the first place.
And you know what? There's just some stuff. I mean, NATO jets to monitor Ukraine border. NATO announces it will deploy AWACS reconnaissance planes in Poland and Romania to monitor the crisis in Ukraine.
I'm going to tell you something right now. These people are messing where they don't only, they're messing where they don't need to be messing. And they're going to really cause I'll just say this. Wars start over stuff like this. And wars can escalate over stuff like this.
Right. So what happens when somebody takes a pot shot at one of these things?
Exactly.
But of course, they're going to be deployed in Poland and Romania, and I suppose will stay in Polish and Romanian airspace.
You suppose they will? I don't think they will at all. They will go wherever they can go to get away with, or wherever they go, they're going to go to be directed, because staying over those airspaces isn't going to do them any good militarily. They're going to be going to other places too where they're not supposed to go. That's the way it's always been. I mean, that's what you might hear from the military, but I mean, you know, they do all kinds of stuff they ain't supposed to do and go all kinds of places they're not supposed to go. But I'm just very afraid of this whole situation. It's really caused me great concern. It really has. And that's about all I can add, because I mean, you know, it only takes, once something gets so volatile, it only takes a spark to set it off. And crazy.
And thus it has ever been.
And, you know, I would rather any types of weaponry of any type of magnitude be in the hands of the Russian Republic, who handle it so well, as being the centerpiece of the former Soviet Union back in those
days. Yeah, because wouldn't you love to have some neo-Nazis with their thumb on the button?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, these Russians have a great respect for war, and you know how I feel about them and what they did in World War II. And they have a much greater respect for war than we do, actually, in my opinion. And if I get pushed right from that, I'm sorry, that's not the first time it will happen, but I don't care, but that's just the way I feel. Well, look, you got other callers, and you got loads to lift and no time to drift, so I will leave you to this fine spring day, but you're supposed to get some ice.
Yeah, I guess it gets a little craptastic on Wednesday.
Yeah, I think winter has not quite left yet.
The high on Thursday around hereabouts is 30, and the low is 19.
Well, AEP would love that.
I reckon.
Everything like that, my Lord in heaven.
I guess I won't be putting on my flip-flops and offending Gina McCarthy anytime soon.
No. Tell you what, I'm trying to find something here, and I'm just wondering how much pushback I want to get from this, if you'll just give me a second or two if I can pull it up. You're just so being so silly here tonight, I swear. I guess it won't. Guess it's not going to appear, but I just put it out on Facebook just to see what the reactions would be, and I don't know if I have gotten any or not. But it has to do with what we were talking about. So, oh, here's the thing from Rand Paul. I don't want to live in a nanny state where people are telling me where I can go and what I can do. Good old Rand, and that thing over his head was looking better. He must have a new.
Maybe it's been getting some sun lamp time.
He probably had to get a new one. But nonetheless.
Yeah, winter can be hard on Dinell.
Dinell, my God, why did you have to mention that? The reason I said,
isn't that what the great wigs were made out of, Dinell?
I don't know. I guess the best ones would have been made out of human hair, but they have Kinecolon and all kinds of fabrics now that are supposedly real good for those things. But I mean, you know, Rand Paul, good Lord, that thing just goes every which way. But he was certainly feeling his oats. I couldn't find what I wrote on Facebook. You know how that thing goes.
Well, if you get a chance, the whole movie is worth the time. American Hustle.
You mentioned that, yeah. Okay.
The opening scene where, God, is it Christian Bale? I think so. Is fixing his comb over with his toupee.
Christian Bale, the little boy that was in Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
Lord have mercy.
And he's just got this. Is it? Now you got me doubting myself. Maybe it isn't. But anyway, the opening scene where he's fixing his toupee will simply devastate you, Jim. It's just awful.
Really?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, just rent it. It's a really good movie, start to finish. But the opening scene with the toupee is just.
What's he doing with it?
Fixing it.
Well, I mean, Okay, you've got my curiosity up. I mean, what more can you do with something like that, you know?
It is the most, there should have been a special Oscar for awful toupee. Because, I mean, this scene is, and you know what I mean when I say it, awful toupee.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, that actor has come a long way since Empire of the Sun. That was also a very, one of my favorite movies. It was a good film. And he, as a young man, did a good job in that. He really did. And he's certainly come a long way since then. Played a lot of different roles and things like that. It's amazing. So, well, listen, you've got other callers that want to talk to you. So, here's a tip of whoever's Wamsuda or whatever they wear their wear on their head.
Yeah, and by the way, Steve confirms, yes, it is Christian Bale. No, if you get it, if you see it, you'll go, no, that is not. Yes, it is. Jim, have a good night.
You too.
All right, bye now. And all of that just reminds me of one of my favorite advertising moments in the history of the world, to wit.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Rand Paul.
Real American Heroes.
Today we salute you, Mr. Really Bad Toupee Wearer. More than any neon sign or exploding scoreboard ever could, your chrome dome cover says, "Hey guys, look at me."
What could you be thinking?
You think it looks natural, but it couldn't look phonier if it had
a chin strap.
Made of space age fibers, it can repel anything. Rain, wind, snow, and especially young women. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Stud in a Rug. Then crack open another for that thing on your head.
I don't think it's all straight.
Bud Light beer, as the Bush singles.
Jesus, I love the choir. I don't think it's all straight. And those of you who have seen American Hustle know of which I speak. So just imagine the horror that will attend poor Jim as he watches it for the first time. There may be screaming that will be audible in space. Lines open, 304-658-3333. On the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn is how you reach the program. Both ways are easy and free. And if you have to pay long distance to call, well, I suggest using the Skype line because, as you've heard on many occasions, it's quite effective. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Bill.
Jim, I hope you're listening and you can call or answer in. Did not the SS combat troops wear a different insignia than the other guys?
Well, I think that, I mean, this one insignia, it literally looks like the European Z that has a slash through it, rotated onto its side.
Yeah, because they had a funny insignia on there. Because I'm telling you, the Army SS consider themselves totally different than the political guys. That was at least from what I've been able to read over the years, which is...
But anyway, you slice it, Bill, having Nazis marching around Kiev is not inspiring, and I can
one
see...
One guy from the Israeli, crazy assholes come from all over, there's no doubt about it. You know, it's not just limited to German Catholics or West Virginia Protestants.
Well, true enough.
You know, there's people, I mean, there are people who would like to go back to the old liturgy of the 1950s where everything was in Latin. God almighty, did I have to struggle with the Latin when I was learning to be an altar boy. The one thing I did like as an altar boy was there was always a little wine left over. And if you're careful...
Wait, I thought the priest chugged the last of that and then he... Ever so
yeah,
delicately wiped
me,
out the chalice.
Beat me if he didn't beat me to it.
What, Bill? I mean, you're a little altar boy and you're carrying a straw. What?
Well, I'd slug it down, man. Pick it up and drink it out of the. What the hell? We had a name for that thing. Is we had to learn to carry it from one side of the altar to the other. And me, being short, I was always worried that one of those damn long cassocks was going to catch under my foot. and down I'd go on my nose.
Well, that's better than having the priest catch you by the foot, so.
Well, you know, that's one thing about Parmadale, a place I was spent so many 4 years. We didn't have any of that, Bob. Any of them, the priests, none of it. So, hey, I can be at least happy about something out there. We had nuns that was, I had a nun take me down to the basement one time and show me where I shouldn't let people touch me. I was about 11. I didn't think it felt that bad to me because I, you know, I couldn't see her anyway. She was, you know.
Yeah, one moment. Interlude on the horn. Tonight, and or I don't know, maybe I should wait for Ron and Raleigh. Tonight, another thing we'll never hear Rush Limbaugh. Tonight on the EIB, Bill discusses, oh, dear God.
Well, on the other hand.
And the next thing you knew, you were going back upstairs and you'd lost your sweet girlish laughter.
Well, beside that, the I had one of them, they grab you by your cheek and smack you like you were a Joe Palooka punching bag, if you remember those. Remember the things that were weighted at the bottom and, I don't know if they still had when you were a kid. Things that were weighted at the bottom and they stood up and then you hit them and they fell backwards and they popped right back up again.
Oh, yeah. I know, yeah.
And they had a, they had those things for sale when I was, and I'll tell you, if you look carefully at the opening to A Christmas Story, they show this window in a department store, and there's a damn tank in one of the scenes, and I had one just like it. And Jim would understand when I said it looked like the one the French had, the SOUMA that the French had that was a damn good tank, but the problem was the French didn't know how to use them in packets like the Germans did, you understand? And in fact, if you go back to World War One, the Allies launched a big attack in 1917, September of 17. They launched an attack led by Renault tanks and the Lawson-shaped Willys or whatever the British call those things. It's been so long, I can't remember everything, Bob. You know, that's just certain things, your names you forget and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the insanity of humanity. There's a pretty good rhyme for you. I'm a poet, but I don't know it. You know, yeah. I know.
And by the way, Lottie notes in the chat room, that happened to me. The cassock caught under my foot, and I did a backflip on the altar.
Oh, boy, that's good. I'm glad to hear it happened to somebody else.
Yeah, it was a 9.2, 9.7, 9.8, and from the Russian judge, 1.1.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah, but you know, you're getting back to this Ukrainian situation, Ukraine. It's insane. The whole thing is insane because what are they going to, unless there's something there that the Western powers want besides just the wheat. I mean, there may be something buried there that I don't know anything about, you know.
You may not, but somebody does.
Oh, if there is somebody to know it, they will. Yes, absolutely.
Because remember, you know, extreme energy extraction, which is what fracking is, which is what tar sands are, you never know where that crap's going to show up. Who knows? Maybe Ukraine is sitting on top of a bunch of frackable shale. It seems like the whole damn rest of the world is.
Yeah. No, man, they sure found a way, huh? I'll tell you, I can just see it now. It was a cartoon. You know when they let the air out of a big ball and it collapses toward the center? Is that what's going to happen when they mine everything and everything is under our feet?
I mean, couldn't we just let the mining concerns out for the asteroids and let all these hydrocarbon freaks go out there and have all the fun they want?
Well,
then again, they might blast one of those damn things out of its orbit, and then the next thing you know, we've got more in common with the dinosaurs than we knew in the first place.
Well, I know there's a thing in Siberia that wasn't it a big lake with the remains of a. Could have been. I've heard talk or read things about it being there was remains of where. Asteroids hit Siberia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a crater there, and it leveled vast, vast, God knows how many, I mean, knocked over entire forests like matchsticks.
Yeah, that's exactly the phrase that I remember seeing, the matchstick phrase. Oh, God. You know, it's to a point, I understand how the Ukrainians feel, but... Like you say, Jim said, if they don't look back on what the what anybody wearing any kind of German symbols or Nazi symbols did in their country. There must have been a hell of a lot of turncoats and traitors there.
But understand, you know, this is not... you know, this. Look, we've got people all over the country, all over the United States of America, not just the old Confederate states, right down the road from me, proudly flying a damnable treason flag, Bill, and they think it's part of their heritage.
Well, you know why they picked up that flag to begin with, don't you? There, in the opening part of the war, there was too much similarity between the stars and bars and stars and stripes.
It's also a bastardization of the St. Andrew's Cross.
Yeah. And that's what I've seen it called in books. Yeah, I had just started a book on that I had made for me by the Site Center by one of their volunteers. It's called, Frozen Hell. It's a history of the Finnish-Russian War in 1939. And the damn machine stopped working, the old tape machine, so I had to order another one today. I said, just my luck, because I'm out of stuff for the new machine, you know. And I had to order a new talking watch. That was fun. They're cheap. $20 for a damn watch that... gives you the time, a stopwatch, and four damn alarms, and the date, the day and date of the month, and a year on top of it. It's like does everything but pick up my laundry for me, you know. And they're $20, and then I bought another timer that's a countdown that I use a lot when I cook, you know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, when you're working in the kitchen and you got something like you're waiting for water to boil, do you stand there and watch it?
No, it never boils if you do that.
That's what they say, yeah. Of course, if I look at it with a dirty look, it may boil faster. I don't know.
You know, a watched boil never pots.
Oh. Yeah, but this Germany's history, anything to do with Nazis, their history in the Ukraine is you know?
Well, and here's part of the answer. I just got a link from ASA out in Vancouver. Ukraine signs $10 billion shale gas deal with Chevron.
Okay, now we've got an answer. We've got a big...
Chevron wants to frack the Ukraine.
And the Russians don't want them doing it next door to them because, number one, they maybe don't want it done, or number two, they want to do it.
Right.
Because I don't look at the...
Well, remember, the essence of fracking, and I think this might be an appropriate time to point this out, Bill. The essence of, you know, fracking is horizontal in nature.
Yep.
Okay, you go down so far, then you start going sideways so far.
Yep.
If we think back to, say, the early 1990s, we might recall that we spent a vast amount of American blood and treasure making sure that Saddam Hussein stopped doing that
to
Kuwait.
Kuwait, yep. Man, it's human nature, Bob. You show somebody a way to hustle, and they can come up with extra money.
Well, but you know, that's the capitalist angle, of course. But the other side of it is that the hydrocarbon industry is willing to burn this planet to a crisp for another quarterly share profit.
Yeah.
There's no getting around. I mean, they say it themselves, you know. You know, we're going to have to, you know, or we'll freeze to death in the dark, like all the other humans did before the discovery of the first hydrocarbons. Because that's when, you know, human beings only emerged on the planet when one of them found coal.
Well, I know a lot of folks who, my buddy that was a Volkswagen master mechanic, and he was out in Middlefield, Ohio, when he moved out of, he was in downtown Cleveland when he was... I was hanging out at his business at night. Me and six or seven other people. It looked like a cartoon strip. People were all hanging out, working on their VWs, and he's walking around giving us advice. He's one of those kind of decent guys, you know. But he moved out to Middlefield, which is Amish in nature, and a lot of horses and buggies out there. And yeah, you know, it's the same all over. He's out in Arizona now, and he's rebuilding the facade for a copper mine, the steel. And he's the one who told me that, you know, they didn't have welding in those days when they built the damn thing, so he's got to go over and do this. It's only the facade, you know. It's a one of those museum deals where somebody says, well, maybe if I create a museum, people will pay a lot of money to see it. Was it P.T. Barnum? Didn't he have one?
This Way to the Egress?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's the guy.
See the Egress.
Yeah. I just, you know, I've been corrected.
J. Cruzen pointed out, actually, Kuwait was fracking Saddam.
That's right. You're right.
Yeah, and Saddam objected to being fracked.
Yeah.
Slant drilled.
Slant drilling, yeah. That's, well, again, who do we have in the Kuwait situation? Who's running that show? I mean, I would call it a capitalist.
Sure it is.
Kiss-assers, if nothing else, up on top, on the top hole. Yeah, because I was pulling into, where the hell is Ohio University located on the, was it Athens?
Athens,
I was
isn't
somewhere
it?
Down on the river playing a job for some blues society that Friday when Saddam had rolled into Kuwait, and all the stories were coming out, the babies being tossed from the cribs, and...
all of which was largely BS.
Yeah. Yeah, and most of what...
I mean,
you know,
the babies being pulled out of the incubator story is on a par with the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah. Well, what's the first casualty of war?
Truth.
Got it. Thank you. Yeah, you remember the old sayings, too, huh? Yeah, it goes on.
Well, I wish they were old sayings, but they get recycled so often these days.
But who do these people think they're pushing when they're pushing against the Soviet Union, which has enough firepower to take us all to hell? I mean, well, I'm headed there sooner than most people. So I hope sooner than you, Bob. You know, you're a lot younger than I am. And again, I tried to order the book 1 minute to midnight. I thought it was 2 minutes to midnight, but it's 1 minute about the missile crisis in Cuba in the, was it 62? The Khrushchev and the old man and the young man. Khrushchev had traveled with the Russian army from Stalingrad to Berlin, Bob. He'd seen a lot of it. There was a book that was made into a movie. I think the book was called The War of the Rats. And the other one was it Enemy at the Gates was one, and the movie was another one, and had another name, and Jesus, when they're fighting in the tractor factory and everything else in Stalingrad, pardon me, Volgograd, guys would be on different sides of the factory and they'd pop out of doors and the Schmeisers and the Russian equivalent were just blowing each other to kingdom come across the factory, you know, or just popping in and out of doors. It was this way to the insane funhouse. Because if you remember what funhouses were, you never knew what was going to pop out of a door at you.
Right.
You know, that's one thing you don't see in amusement parks anymore?
You know what? I'm not surprised because nothing can compete with the modern horror movie.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but the one at Euclid Beach Park here in Cleveland, they had a tree with a hole in it, and periodically a papier-mâché owl would come out of the tree and disappear back in. So some customer decided he wanted to see, so he had his face up close to it when the damn owl came out and smacked and broke his nose. That'll teach you to keep your nose out of other people's business, I suppose. Yeah, it's just, the lawsuits alone, moving staircases, look, he fell down. Oh, who's that behind him? Oh, his lawyer. I'll be damned. You know, that's the old, I have more lawsuit lawyer jokes than I care to mention, you know. But this is a dangerous situation. And what the hell is Obama doing? Is he taking orders from these guys and that's why the U.S. planes are going to be flying? That is a warlike
action. Well, that's a NATO decision, of course, and that means that there were more than a couple of people in. But I don't think to his credit that Obama is out there trying to do any saber rattling. That's why the right wing keeps calling him a big old sissy. I mean, they dragged Count Dicula out over the weekend, Bill.
Jesus.
To talk about what a sissy Barack Obama is.
Well, I keep wondering.
Because he won't start a war on false pretexts.
Yeah. Well, this is not a border war or two drunks shooting at each other with 38 specials. Don't these assholes, pardon my French, Bob, but don't these people understand that these guys have as many missiles as they care to have? They didn't stop building the damn things. They sure had plenty.
Absolutely.
Is it my generation and possibly a big part of yours that are the only ones that understand and respect with fear the use of nuclear weapons? That's like the...
You know, I think part of forgetting nuclear weapons has been a determined effort on the part of the right wing to make people think that, because they really didn't like it. We've had some conversations recently about the made-for-TV movie The Day After.
Yeah.
The Reagan administration hated that film because it did not present a winnable nuclear war.
Well, I saw one similar in an art house that I think was shot in England. And they say I was trying to impress a young woman. I took her to that. That sure cut me out of any future with that one. Because they had it. It was showing in an art theater. So it wasn't the same one it was on TV. I think it was on maybe in the... It was before I was married, so it was before 1970 that I went and saw this. We had an art house that would show anything. There was an English series of English comedies called the Carry On series. Carry On Doctor, Carry On Nurse, and they were all English music hall slapstick humor along the lines of the guy who made the big implant on television. What's his name? He was on nightly television, at least once a week. He was an English comic.
Oh.
Big fat guy.
I'm
having trouble.
No, I know. Real slapstick stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, what's happened to my mind?
Yeah, art movie houses. I saw two great ones down there. I saw...
Benny Hill.
Yeah, Benny Hill. There was one on the Newport Jazz Festival of 1960. They made a movie about that, and they showed it. And that was the one that broke up in some funny violence. I know for a fact that Muddy Waters and his band with James Cotton and those guys were played at the 60 Newport Festival. And, they got funny down there. You know what it is? You get some young people that can't handle booze. It's the old story. Anybody, but young folks, including me at that time, that's one thing I was proud of. People never knew how crap-faced I was. Bob, I could do a half a fifth of gin on a good night by myself. And I'm not talking about mixed with anything either. Just bring me a water glass. Bring me an 8-ounce water glass.
You're going to drink it. That's the way to do it.
I'd work it to death. Alternating with coffee out of a thermos and funny cigarettes on the breaks. I must have been in great shape. But on the other hand, I was never, I never got a DUI ticket.
Well, and your strength is as the strength of 10 because your heart is pure.
Well, and I came off stage one night and smacked the guy twice for knocking the PA power system over, so... And my guitar player was telling my daughter, she said, your old man's got a gun in the back of his amplifier. Well, yeah, because I didn't want to stand there and play wearing the damn thing, did I? There's nothing worse, embarrassing, and you report on it constantly, about guns falling out of pockets, holsters, belts, and then the morons that carry the automatic with a bullet in the chamber, that hits the floor, and you know what happens? You've commented enough times. The damn thing goes off, and if anybody's... You never know who's in the vicinity. That was what I was always afraid of. You drop the thing, it goes off, and you shoot yourself in the foot, It's like, well, how about that one? Yeah, but this situation in the Ukraine, the influx of people with Nazi regalia is scary. And I remembered that, like Jim said, the SS troops wore a funny insignia. And I'll tell you, know something? Those guys looked, the combat divisions, the SS divisions looked down on the political aspect of the movement. They thought that because they were on the front line, they had more of whatever it took to be a hard ass, you know? Which is true. Because they had SS Panzer divisions, you know, SS divisions that were primarily armored troops. And stuff that I don't understand. I'm still back trying to figure out a Civil War regiment strength. And that was something that happened up north, is they would use up the strength of a northern regiment. That's why at Gettysburg, the 1st Minnesota Regiment, which had started out with 1,000 men, held a strategic spot on Cemetery Ridge on the lower end, on the left, on the right side of where, you know, the place that you've probably been to, and I have been to, the center of the line, which I believe is around the Lincoln speaking point.
Yeah.
And to the left of that, between that and the Round Top, there was the ridge got lower, and this Minnesota regiment was sent in there on July 2nd, because here came a bunch of Georgians. Was it General Ambrose or something? Ambrose was in the guy's name that was leading the Confederates. And that 272 Minnesotans took, I think, a huge percentage, and Jim could help us out there with an email, a huge percentage of casualties that unit took, stopping up that hole. Today I tried to order a copy from the library of McKinley Cantor's novel on Andersonville, and can't get it.
Hmm.
They don't have it. Because I was asking today one of the guys, who the hell decides what books the Library of Congress picks up and puts on tape?
Oh, wouldn't you love to know?
Yeah, because some of the stuff is just, we got to have something for everybody. There's a ton of detective stuff, science fiction, a lot of romances, a lot of history. And every month they send out a new list of what's available, and then you sit there and try to order it as it comes in. But I won't keep you. But this whole thing in Wheatville over there is, well, I don't know what Jim was talking about. The Russians taking over again. Are they also looking at Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia, the Baltic states?
That remains to be seen, and I guess that's one of the concerns.
Because is Putin really being a villain, or is Mr. Putin worried about the place that produces one hell of a lot of wheat that the Russians eat?
Well, I think that makes the situation different.
Yeah.
But by the same token, if it's about dragging the former Soviet satellites back into the Russian orbit, then it'll be one after another after another.
Well, I can think of
Georgia and South Ossetia come to mind.
Yeah.
Chechnya, anybody?
Yeah.
Right? Well, Bill, it is good to hear from you, and I hope you have yourself a good evening.
I'll laugh. When you talk about Ukrainians, to me, I think of a goaltender named Terry Sawchuk and another guy named Andrew Chuck, Kinder Chuck, and the Bruins have a guy with the same last name as a buddy of mine, Boychuk. And because actually there was a situation in Canada during World War I that they did to the Ukrainian population what was done here to Japanese Americans. Anyway, you take care.
All right. You have a very good evening, Bill. We'll talk soon.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. I don't think there are necessarily any easy answers. Let's take a brief break. I want to send out thanks real quick to thanks to our buddy Jay Cruzen, who along with Sal has met half of Dr. Bill's Lucky Monday challenge. Remember, there's a $100 offer out there to match the first 100 that come in to help with the ongoing struggle that is bill paying here at the Horn. Thank you very much. You know, I wrote a thank you note to Reinhardt after his contribution over the weekend, and he wrote back and said, "It is my joy, Bob. I intend to help out regularly, so to speak. At the moment, I just can't listen live via my available toys. I listen each morning to the previous night's activities. Note, I do not say show. The family is way much more than that. Peace and honors. Reinhardt." Thank you. Thank you very, very much. So we will take a break, and your input is not only welcome, but it is necessary to this little endeavor that we call Conversation Radio. And just by way of taking a break, I want to remind that Devin reminded me last week that there is a new album out by the patron saint band of this radio network. We just sort of made them that, didn't ask permission or anything, but they are. The Drive-By Truckers have a new album out, and it is magnificent. It is called the English Oceans. And it has a blend of songs penned by Patterson Hood and songs penned by Mike Cooley. And it is the best they have done in years, without a doubt. And so I thought, just by way of encouraging folks to check out the album, that I might share a track with you. This is a Patterson Hood song, "The Part of Him."
else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him. Someone else will play the part of him.
From the brand new album, English Oceans, the Drive-By Truckers, the part of him. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is to support independent music, independent artists. Well, maybe independent's not even the right word. More like artists who you will never hear immediately after hearing a Miley Cyrus track or a Katy Perry track or anything on terrestrial for-profit radio. This is real stuff. And one of the things that I love best about it is this is progressive rock and roll. And I don't mean like Yes, progressive rock and roll. I mean this is rock and roll with a real progressive bent. The Drive-By Truckers walk the walk and talk the talk. They've stood up to stop the Walmartization of Athens, Georgia. They've spoken passionately about the need to protect communities from being poisoned, the Tennessee River from being poisoned. This is stuff worth getting behind. It's 20 minutes past the hour. If you want to jump into the program, you are more than welcome to do so. 304-658-3333. By the way, you can order English Oceans over at drivebytruckers.com. You can get it on iTunes. And you can get it over at Amazon. And I think if you order the CD, you get the digital download as part of the package for very, very little money. So I highly recommend supporting an awesome band who have real respectable politics, even. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and we do still have more Morans. Speaking of rivers and waters and not poisoning communities, oopsie, I'm sure Ron and Raleigh is already well aware of this, but it turns out that you know that the governor of North Carolina, Stan, is a former Duke Energy executive. And you know, of course, that was Duke Energy who poisoned the living bejesus out of the Dan River recently with a toxic ash spill that they had no idea of how to stop, that went on for days and wound up with tens of thousands and thousands of gallons of concentrated poison flowing into the Dan River and downstream to communities like Danville, Virginia. Among other things, Governor Pat McCrory, who is presiding over the wingnutization of North Carolina, took more than $1 million. You know, that's speech. That's not $1 million. That's $1 million. It's $1 million words. That's $1 million voices. That's a million expressions of appreciation for Pat McCrory. No, it's $1 million. He took more than $1 million in campaign donations from Duke Energy and its employees. And, you know, they say, hey, you know, he's used to be part of the team. He's one of ours. You know, it's just it's kind of like when the local kid goes out and does well on America's Got Talent or something. You know, he's one of ours. You know, got to support him. And so when Duke Energy and you know how it is, I mean, Duke Energy employees also gave to Pat McCrory. So it turns out that what's Pat McCrory going to do? I mean, he would never, ever, I'm sure, take money and then make decisions that were favorable to his former employer or anything. Heaven forfend. I mean, I'm sure this guy is a Christian and wouldn't say shit if he had a mouthful? No, heavens no. Last week, his Department of Environmental and Natural Resources, Diener, just wiped out because, you know, fiscal responsibility, just wiped out 13% of the staff positions in the Division of Water Resources of the Department of Environmental and Natural Resources. North Carolina Department of Environmental and Natural Resources website says that the Division of Water Resources protects North Carolina's surface and groundwater resources for the health and welfare of the citizens of North Carolina and the economic well-being of the state. So next time Duke Energy dumps a few tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of gallons of poison into a river in North Carolina, Stan, there will be 13% less people who can say, hey, why are you dumping concentrated coal toxin poisons into the river? 13% less. Meanwhile, here's what Pat McCrory, Moran, has to say about the outfit. Yeah, this is special. This comes from WSOC-TV. Enjoy.
Started taking very strong action.
Governor Pat McCrory was here in Charlotte today responding to criticism that he isn't doing enough to protect the environment. The comments come in the wake of Duke Energy's recent coal ash spill.
Eyewitness News reporter Greg Susskind explains the governor's comments seem to focus on the pitfalls of the previous administration.
Governor Pat McCrory was in town for an economic announcement, but afterwards he addressed our questions about whether he's done enough to protect the environment. He said this.
Our deaner under our administration has been the most aggressive action in North Carolina history.
I'd love to know what that enforcement was.
That reaction from Catawba Riverkeeper Sam Perkins, who says McCrory and Purdue's administrations fell short in protecting the environment. Last month, the Duke Energy power plant accidentally dumped 39,000 tons of coal ash waste into the Dan River, which coated the river bottom for 70 miles. Duke says the water quality there is now back to the way it was before the spill, but environmentalists want all of Duke's ponds that store coal ash moved away from water sources.
It's common sense. It's very simple.
Just yesterday, a Wake County judge seemed to agree, ordering immediate action, but he didn't specify what that meant. Cost to move coal ash ponds would run into the hundreds of millions of dollars. Environmentalists say there's no other way that's acceptable.
We'll see how much longer they want to drag this out, but you know, we clearly have the legal system on our side.
McCrory says he's confident Diener and Duke will come up with a long-term solution. He rejected allegations that his administration is lax in enforcement.
I think there has been some lax issues within the state, and it was occurring prior to my administration.
In Charlotte, Greg Susskind, Channel 9, Eyewitness News.
A question for Greg Susskind, Channel 9, Eyewitness News. Why is it, Greg, if that really is your name, can I call you Greg? Greg, why is it that every time you refer to someone who objects to having concentrated toxic coal ash poison in the waters that belong to the people of the state of North Carolina and we the people of the United States of America, why is it every time you refer to one of those people that you have to call them an environmentalist? Is it impossible to care about vast quantities of poison being pumped into an ecosystem? Is it possible to object to that without being an environmentalist? How about calling somebody a person who doesn't want poison in their babyist? Oh, that's too many words. Jesus. And, of course, it was Duke Energy that dumped all this crap into the Dan River. And it's Duke Energy, largely, who burns more mountaintop... North Carolina generally burns more mountaintop removal coal than any other state in the Union. And, of course, the cost associated with dumping all that poison into the rivers will be borne by the people who pay rates to have electricity, so, in the words of the coal industry, they won't freeze to death in the dark. Jesus. And, you know, how do we know that customers are going to pay for that? Well, according to Duke Energy Chief Executive Lynn Good, via WRAL.com, Duke Energy Chief Executive Lynn Good said, "We currently estimate we will spend between $4.5 billion and $5.5 billion over the next 10 years, with $900 million expected to be spent in 2014-2016 timeframe." I'm sorry, that was Duke Chief Financial Officer Steve Young on a shareholder conference call. Yeah, because you had to be a shareholder. If you just happen to be one of those people that Duke Energy routinely poisons, not so much. You weren't invited to the conference call. You weren't a stakeholder. Approximately 85% of our expected environmental compliance investments will be in the Carolinas and Indiana. Both of these jurisdictions have a strong track record of allowing utilities to recover costs related to environmental compliance investments. In other words, by recover costs, they mean drag it out of the hides of the people who pay them for providing electricity. Can I ask a quick question? How many multi-billion gallon toxic coal ash dumps are associated with solar energy? How many multi-billion gallon toxic coal ash dumps are associated with wind power? None? I'll be damned. So if everybody had solar panels on their home in a state that gets a whole lot of sunshine, like, say, North Carolina, would the need to store, whether it be near a river or not near a river, would the need to store toxic coal ash go down significantly? Now, I know there probably are some, but for instance, in a nation like Germany, where a great deal of energy is still provided by solar, even though they're on the same latitudinal parallel with Alaska, how many toxic coal ash dumps are there? How often does a toxic coal ash dump pour millions, okay, tens of thousands of, hundreds of thousands maybe of gallons, because that was measured in tons, of toxic coal ash into a river? How often does that happen? How about France? England? The UK, Spain. By the way, Spain just stopped a mountaintop removal job dead in its tracks. Good for you, Spain. Good for you. Jesus. Morons. And yes, here with about 28 minutes to go in the program, we are halfway toward meeting Dr. Bill's Lucky Monday Challenge. Thanks very much to Jay Cruz and Sal. We only have halfway to go, $50 more to meet that challenge and pay some pending bills. So thank you very much to both individuals. Oh, Lordy. No, we've got plenty more. How's about Marco Rubio, Repig Lickin' from Florida? You know, he kind of disappeared for a while after his entire party threatened to give him a swirly for trying to do something about the immigration crisis in this country. Well, that's not to say that Marco Rubio has been silent or plans on staying silent. Marco Rubio did some speechifying in Washington today at the office, the D.C. office of the Google. And Marco Rubio knows how important the interweb tubes are. And he, by God, told them exactly how important the interweb tubes are. And they are very important. By the way, just because you'll get a kick out of this, the audio that I'm about to play for you is preceded, and it comes from The Hill, a publication, a D.C. publication. The Marco Rubio clip is preceded by an ad, Build the Keystone XL.
Marco Rubio said Monday that he will introduce two technology-focused bills aimed at growing the economy and protecting opportunities for innovation. Speaking about economic recovery at Google's D.C. headquarters, Rubio said he will introduce one bill to protect the free and open Internet and another bill to free up airwaves currently being used by federal agencies. The possible presidential contender also touched on tax reform, trade authority, regulatory costs, and energy policy.
And now maybe we can have another Keystone XL pipeline ad. Jesus. No, really. Since the web is worldwide and since it has proven such an effective catalyst for pro-democratic revolution, it has become a battleground that many fight to control. Many governments are lobbying for regulatory control by the United Nations or a governmental regime. And opposing this takeover and preserving Internet freedom must be a top national priority. Yeah. Marco, buddy, the biggest threat to the Internet in the United States today doesn't come from the United States government or, God knows, from the blue-helmeted Muslim Marxist fascist thugs of the United Nations. It comes from folks like Comcast and Viacom and Fox and yes. And that's all that, and you know what? That ship's already sailed. He vowed to, according to the Hill story, he vowed to introduce legislation to reallocate federal government spectrum to the airwave-hungry wireless companies who are looking to appeal to subscribers increasingly relying on their smartphone and other mobile devices. So we're not going to have less control of the Internet. We're going to have more corporate control of the Internet. If you are a Netflix subscriber, for instance, you might note that you've started having trouble. You're not having trouble, but that your movies are taking a little bit longer to download. That's not necessarily because you have crappy interweb tubes. That's because the big telecoms and cable providers are trying to put the screws to Netflix because they want to sell movies too. See how it works? Capitalism. Oh, what an amazing, joyous experience it is. And Marco Rubio, Moran. Kevin, by the way, reports from Colorado Springs. Subject line, sun spill. Bob, there was a sun spill reported today near the Colorado River, which services many with fresh water. Untold millions of gallons of sun spilled into the river today as a result of a broken pipe. However, no injuries, no poisoning or pollution of the river or countryside was reported because it's the sun. Perfectly natural and useful sun. Right. I hesitate. I really, really do. I hesitate to feed it. No, wait. No. I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go here. I had this in the stack, and I kind of saved it for later. And this is that moment. Now, everybody knows that the National Repiglick and Rifle Association hates anything to do with a limitation on slaughter. Human beings, animals, whatever. We know, for instance, that the NRA opposes limiting the capacity of magazines that can hold multiple rounds, the kinds of magazines that Adam Lanza used to make sure a bunch of 7-year-olds didn't get to become 8-year-olds at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. Or that were used at a midnight showing of a Batman movie in Aurora, Colorado, because freedom. Wolverines! Right? Sure. Every time I think the NRA can't get any more vicious or ridiculous, I just get a little rap on the back of the head from the goddess of irony. The National Republican Rifle Association just sent out a blast email recently, about a week ago, a little over a week ago. They sent the blast email out to their 3.1 million teabagging, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, strychnine-swigging, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking members, gun-toting. What were they so upset about? Were the blue-helmeted UN fascist Muslim Marxist Kenyan thugs of the UN going to advance on the Kenyan Muslims' order to take away all their goons? Mm-mm. No, what the Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies did is decided that maybe the commercial trade in elephant ivory was something that the United States ought not participate in. Because, see, it's blood ivory. There's still a hell of a lot of poaching that goes on in what remains of the elephant population. And so the White House announced a ban on the ivory trade and put a total embargo on importation of new items that contain elephant ivory. And the only ivory that can be exported is if the ivory is proven to be antique, you know, as in really old, items more than 100 years old. The White House fact sheet said, "The ban is the best way to help ensure that U.S. markets do not contribute to the further decline of African elephants in the wild. This, of course, drove the already criminally insane National Republican Rifle Association absolutely into a booger-eating frenzy. I mean, they were munching them like Fritos." And so that email that went out to its 3.1 million mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking members asked them to write to Congress and tell Congress to block that Kenyan Muslim fascist Marxist dictator from sissified mom jean wearing appeaser from imposing the ivory ban. Why? Well, here's what the NRA said. "This is another attempt by this anti-gun administration to ban firearms based on cosmetics and would render many collections and firearms valueless. any firearm, firearm accessory, or knife that contains ivory, no matter how big or small, would not be able to be sold in the United States unless it is more than 100 years old. This means if your shotgun has an ivory bead or inlay, your revolver or pistol has ivory grips, your knife has an ivory handle, or if your firearm accessories, such as cleaning tools, contain any ivory, the item would be illegal to sell. Really? No. Because the NRA are liars. This is about importation and exportation. So it means stuff with new ivory in it can't be brought into the United States, and it means that people who have stuff with new ivory in it can't sell it outside the United States. Jesus. Yeah, who gives a damn if a few pachyderms get took down for their tusks? If God didn't want them took down for their tusks, he wouldn't allowed for guns to be made and sold under Second Amendment protections that could take them down for their ivory and put them lovingly into the stocks of our shooting guns. Wolverines! By the way, just in case anybody's wondering, in 2013 alone, an estimated 30,000 African elephants were killed for their ivory. That's about 80 elephants a day. To supply the American lust for pistol grips? Really? It's worth sacrificing the population of the largest land mammals on Earth so some tasteless yahoo can have ivory-handled pistols for freedom-protecting purposes? Jesus! What a sick bunch they are. And what? Well, I suppose if they didn't oppose that and a whole bunch of ivory, and there weren't any more African elephants, I'm sure that would be Barack Obama's fault too. Let's go to the phones. And by the way, still hoping to meet Dr. Bill's $100 Lucky Monday challenge. $50 to go. That's all that remains. You contribute 10, it turns into 20. 5 turns into 10, 20 turns into 40. That's how that works. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Dave from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, what's happening, Dave?
How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Interesting conversation you're having right there. You know, it's amazing. Last night I was watching a video on the Ngorongoro crater over there in Tanzania. You know about that? What the Ngorongoro is?
I recognize it, but off the top of my head, no.
It's a game reserve. It's kind of this valley that collapsed volcano. I don't know, a million years ago, some volcano collapsed. They have an ecosystem there.
Oh, so it's the caldera of an old volcano?
Yeah, it's
but it's really, a really, really big one?
Huge. I think it's like 12 miles across, 12 miles in diameter, so 150 square miles.
Okay, yeah, 3,202 square miles.
Yeah, it's huge. It's big. But, it's more than 140 square. But, I actually went over there when I was a kid, when I was 24, I traveled over there to Africa, saw all the animals over there. It was beautiful, really was. Now, the thing about it, this ivory trade, horrible stuff. Can't believe that they're killing all these animals. And
just remember, Dave, the elephants are dying for freedom.
Oh, give me a break. Well, they're killing all these rhinos too, and
again, for freedom.
Yeah, no, I think it's an aphrodisiac. Right on it, an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, even though it's made up of, like, hair and sweat.
Yeah, whatever. But
you never know what's going to give your average right winger a stiffy, so, yeah.
Oh, God. I only went hunting once in my life, and I found it to be just a bad
thing. I mean, I've hunted, and I've never known a deer or a bird or a varmint to care whether he was killed with an with a rifle that had ivory inlays or without.
I don't think they have much opinion about it. You don't want to be killed. You just want to live like you and me. But, I think I was about 13 years old. We went out deer hunting, and I was my sister's boyfriend, and he was saying, well, we might walk around all night and even not even see a deer. I said, oh, okay, well, when we went to go leave, he brought only one bullet with him. He had a 30-30. And I said, why are you bringing only one bullet? He says, well, if we take a shot, it's not going to, any deer that's within a mile is going to be gone. So I said, oh, well, can we take this 22 also? I had a little 22 rifle. And he said, yeah, okay. I took the 22. He took the 30-30. We went outside, went up the back hill behind the house that they were renting in the hills here in Oregon, and we weren't out like 5 minutes before we hit on a deer. There was a deer. I shined the light, take a shot with a 30-30, which was quite loud, but the deer just stood there, didn't even move. So he grabbed the 22 from me, and we got him with a 22, and it was quite an ordeal. But it was a shocking experience, and I would never want to have shot the deer myself. I don't know. It kind of like when you
deer hunting, all the fun ends the minute you pull the trigger.
Yeah, which
means in essence that you can have every bit as much fun doing it with a camera.
Yeah, I never really got into guns. My uncle was really into them, but
I mean there really is a difference between hunting for sport and hunting for food.
Yeah. Well, we had that.
But the hard work of gutting and then hanging and then skinning and then parting out the deer.
Yeah, we did all that.
Yeah, it is hard damn work.
Oh yeah. It's an ordeal.
And it's also a skill, because if you don't drain them, so to speak.
Yeah, you got to bleed them out.
Yeah, if you don't bleed them out, they're going to taste terrible.
Uh huh. Yeah. I that was all part of that lesson. In fact, I was charged with hauling the buckets up the hill and burying the guts too. That was my job. So.
Oh, really? You buried them? Because a lot of times they get left out for the foxes and stuff.
We just dug a little hole and buried them, and that was my one deer hunting experience, though. And it was quite fast too. As they say, we were only out about 5 minutes before we came across this doe up the hill. And there's a lot of deer up in the here in Oregon. Tons. Remember one day, we were up at a place called Silver Falls outside of east of, Salem, down south, 40, 50 miles from Portland. And, if you ever come to Oregon, you gotta go to Silver Falls. It's beautiful. It's like this idyllic waterfall down there. And,
I'll bet it doesn't run with heavy metals.
No, it's beautiful cascade, spring water coming out of there. And, anyway, we're coming back from, we came up from the falls and got in the truck, and we're driving through this park at dusk, and we came across a doe and a fawn in front of us. And so we stopped the car and looked around, and we were in the middle of like a a deer herd. I mean, there were like 20, 25 head of deer all around us. It was so cool.
Well, I drove past one of those just the other day. There's a family that has a house not too far from here, and one gets the idea that they feed deer pretty hard. And there was a herd of something that, yeah, I'd probably say a good solid two dozen does out there just grazing away in their side yard. And, of course, because of the way the laws of the state of West Virginia play out, it is illegal to shoot within 500 feet of a dwelling. So I guess maybe they're trying to preserve the herd to a certain extent. Or maybe they just like having a lot of deer in their yard.
Well, it's nice having wildlife around you, around that stuff.
Well, as a general statement, okay. But if you've just busted your ass to put in a garden, and they come in and eat it down to nothing, then it's not so nice to have wildlife around you.
Yeah, we used to have that problem too on the farm. We would put blood meal around the base of the plant.
Oh, at one point or another, I've tried urine, human hair. You know, you go down to the barber and say, "Hey, would you bag me up all your, you know, when you sweep up, would you just bag that up for me for the next few days?" And it'll keep them away for a couple of days, but then they realize. I mean, they're not stupid. They realize that it's just a smell. And so, yeah, the only thing I've ever seen that works around here is an electric fence with a strand at about 8 inches off the ground and every foot or so all the way up to about 8 feet.
All right, a dog.
Even a dog, not so much.
Really?
I mean, the dogs go, there's neighbor dogs next door. They go crazy all night long, you know, over the deer. The deer run away, then the deer run back.
Yeah, then they come back at 4 a.m. something. That's their day. The night is their day.
Yeah. It does. It takes a lot of the fun out of gardening to have the whole damn thing eaten by a bunch of rats with antlers.
Rats with antlers, huh? Well, I know it does. But we used to have them do that too.
Which is a far cry from wiping out the elephant population, so that some tacky teabagger can have ivory inlays in his shotgun.
Well, I can't believe that these African countries let people do that.
Well, they don't let. I mean, they try to curtail it. But it's the eternal dynamic tension between the burglar and the locksmith.
Yeah. And there's a lot of money in that ivory, too.
And if you put enough people out there maybe to make sure that there are no poachers that come in, that tends to spook the elephants, too.
Yeah.
So but none of these countries have a sufficient budget to even approach absolutely sufficient protection. Hey, Dave, good hearing from you. I got to get out of here.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk to you later.
All right, take care. Have a good evening. Bye now. Dave calling from Oregon. And thus we come to the end of tonight's Moran Monday. Hopefully tomorrow night we will be able to finish Dr. Bill's Lucky Monday challenge, which will, I guess, become a Lucky Tuesday challenge. So thanks, everybody. Thanks to Jay Cruzen and Sal for getting us halfway to the challenge. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to all of you who tune in and join this conversation via email, via Skype, via Twitter, via Facebook, in the chat room, and on the phones. Thank you all very much. You are what makes this worth doing. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox, who was answering questions about the website with me even as the show progressed. Thank you, John Fox. I know how busy you are, and all your help is so very much appreciated. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Where would progressive radio be without Ben Burch and the White Rose Society? This is the 12th year of the White Rose. Ben has never sent a bill, and yet at the same time he has managed literally to save progressive radio through the good offices of the White Rose Society on the Internet. Wow. Thanks to Glenn. Glenn just chipped in to help with Dr. Bill's challenge. Thank you very much. That is most helpful. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.